The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's like I was in the other chair saying.
It's almost like you were like that.
Almost. Kelly Bidlin alongside. That's the voice of Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number 9. So much more than a producer. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Was it weird being over here?
Yes, very odd.
Did you feel like Kelly Bidlin sitting in this chair?
No.
No? You didn't absorb the essence of Kelly?
I did have a much quicker clock in my head where I'm like, wait, how long do I stay here? It was just strange.
It is weird. Couple times I've done spots in your chair, I feel the same way. I'm like, something feels way different about this.
That's all it takes.
3 feet away.
That's all it takes. Different angle, everything. We got Mark Borchardt coming up on the show from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. Talk Major League Baseball with us. I'm sure he'll have a pick of the day. He'll try to foist a parlay of the day on us, but then I will insist on a side. He will comply. That's how it works.
Did he not have one last week? I don't think he had a parlay.
Well, I ran him into a wall.
Oh.
It's probably my fault.
Oh, okay.
Jake Hahn on the NHL. How about the Hurricanes saying we're not dead yet?
Staying alive.
I believe that's what the BGs were talking about, the Carolina Hurricanes. Yep. Jay Conn will join us. And then Drew Dinsick, hour number 2, NBA and tennis. Let's see what else he's got in Paris today. By the way, we have a request from J-Rod to get you to pronounce not only the main court at Roland Garros, but also courts 2 and 3.
Hey, you got it. You just need to text them to me.
I'll send them to you. So we'll get a pronunciation from Kelly on the top 3 courts there at Roland Garros. So we'll talk tennis with us, of course, the NBA as well. And then the age-old question, can Aaron Judge win the Triple Crown? Sure, we could talk, can he win the MVP? But, you know, that's what everybody else talks about. Can Aaron Judge win the Triple Crown? We'll talk about that coming up later on the show as well. And I'll have a couple tennis plays that remain from my tennis plays overnight. We'll get to those here momentarily. But we must begin, Kelly Bidlin, with the NBA last night, where the Oklahoma City Thunder take a 3-1 lead over the Minnesota Timberwolves in the NBA Western Conference Finals, best of 7. They take it back to OKC to try to close out the T-Wolves in 5 after their 2-point win last night. They do not cover. T-Wolves cover, as so many folks in the contest bidded on that one. I was having a debate with 128-126, by the way, the final score.
Oh, good. I wasn't the only one. Okay, cool. I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah. I think there's 5 folks alive. 5 folks mathematically alive left in the contest here. Fezzik, the man to beat. Zach Cohen on his heels. But I was having a talk with somebody yesterday. They were like, oh, it's bad beat. I was like, yeah, that's not a bad beat.
No, it's not.
But you were definitely on the right side if you had OKC, I think. And you probably should feel bad about it. Yes, it was a tough one, but bad beat it was not. We'll get to this Nate Duncan tweet here momentarily. I just want to go through if you missed the last sequence of this game, the whole game was really this dance between OKC winning by 3 and by 9. So the entire game was that margin, with the exception of 30 seconds. There was only 30 seconds in this whole game where the Thunder led by more than 9 points. They led by 11 points for 30 seconds, really close to the beginning of the second half. 40 seconds left in the game. It's 123-118. McDaniels goes to the rack. He's blocked by Holmgren. McDaniels steals, and you think it's over right there, but McDaniels steals it from Shea, or as the Israeli trio that I was happened to watch this game with in the short and the sportsbook kept calling him Shy. I was dying the whole time.
Hey, by the way, not nearly enough of a reaction on the broadcast initially to that Chet block.
Oh, it was awesome.
I got a block by Chet Holmgren. I was like, what are you? That was like a massive block.
It was kind of like the game clincher you thought at the time.
And then a terrible turnover.
And then McDaniel steals awesome. It right from Shea. He hits a 3, 123-121 with 23 seconds left. So they got a foul, right? Because you're within the 24 seconds here. Shea's fouled with 14 seconds left. He makes them both. 125-121. Gobert follow-up bucket. Followed up someone else's shot, followed up his own shot. It was kind of Angel Reese-y. 9.9 seconds left. He hits both. Or excuse me, he makes the follow-up bucket. Pardon me. 125-123 with 9.9 left. So they got a foul. They foul Shea with 8.8 left. He makes the first, but he misses the second. And this is where the folks who had OKC were like, oh, against the number were like, oh, no. So 126-123, 8.4 left. You ask yourself, will OKC foul? Yes. Because they have fouls to give. They immediately foul Reed with 7.8 left. Then they had one. That was the one to give. Then they foul Reed again with 7.2 left. Remember, they're up three. He makes both free throws, 126-125. Now Minnesota has to foul. SGA fouled with 6.1 left. He makes both, 128-125. And then Caruso fouls Ant in the backcourt with 3.5 seconds left. He makes the first, but now with only 3.5 left, he has to purposely miss the second, which he does. No foul is called on the scrum on the rebound. SGA then heaves it down court out of bounds. They adjust it. Oh, no, they didn't adjust it to 0.3, did they? Was it 0.1 or 0.3?
It was 0.1. They readjusted it very quickly to 0.3, Gil. And I'm wondering if they really didn't want to get into the whole,
yeah,
hey, that fan catching the ball affected how much time should have come off. I actually think, though, that they probably in the end, that's where the time should have been, is yeah, right around 0.3. So yeah, I don't think it's a huge deal.
I don't think it's a huge deal. But, you know, the difference, again, we make a big deal about that because 0.3, you are allowed to catch and shoot at that right point. Anything below that, you're not. So it's 128-126. T-Wolves now beyond half court. Randall inbounds, heaves it toward the hoop. No chance. OKC wins. Ball caroms off. T-Wolves cover, but OKC wins. SGA 49. That's 40 points, 9 boards, 10 assists. One board shy of a 40-point triple-double. Jalen Williams, 34. Holmgren, 21. A 79-point fourth quarter between the two of these teams, 41-38 T-Wolves. But the T-Wolves with 21 turnovers in this game, which is really maybe the most telling stat of all. So I have several things here. Mm-hmm. One, let's put up the Nate Duncan tweet, because much has been made of this here. The NBA, he said, has to change the rule, because that play-by-play I just did the last 40 seconds was nothing but fouls and yeah, free throws, right? So he says the NBA has to change the rule to eliminate the smart, that's in quotes, the smart play of fouling up three. Should be one shot, and the ball, if you foul outside the three-point line up three with shot clock off, turned an amazing game into a free throw contest late, robbed us of a great finish. Well, I disagree. I'm not about this. I don't think you can. First of all, you know, we've been talking about fouling up three on this show since the dawn of time, that it is the smart play. I don't think you can go to something. Yes, I get it. It's aesthetically unpleasing. We had this great game where no one could miss a shot, it felt like. Just great offense. But you can't then penalize, in quotes, right? You can't punish, let's say, the team that has worked to be up 3 points. You can't then make it artificial. You can't make artificial competition at that point and penalize that team, the team that's ahead, and make them not able to foul. You can't not let them strategize at that point. So while I understand, because you think it's aesthetically unpleasing, and so much of our sports is about ratings and is about eyeballs and is about being, you know, a fun thing to watch, you can't do this.
I'm a little surprised to. I didn't even ask you when you sent me this tweet last night. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. I'm interested to see what Gil's take is here, because I was surprised to see this from Nate Duncan, one of the better NBA minds and better NBA podcasts out there that I listen to fairly often. Gil, I haven't heard him complain about this before personally, but clearly he's been thinking about this for a while.
Yes, he has.
You know what? My immediate reaction when I first read this was, This is kind of similar to the tush push to me. We are making a big deal. If every team in every situation could execute this perfectly, then maybe we need to think about something here, because it is not very aesthetically pleasing, right? But we just saw the Thunder themselves screw this up not all that too long ago. Teams botch this situation all the time. And just because OKC actually played it almost perfectly last night, then we're going to go to this far? I'm with you. This is...
No, you can't. It's as simple as you cannot punish the team that worked to be ahead. You can't all of a sudden change the rules.
JVT
said, by the way, the other team is able to foul. The team that's down is able to foul up until that point. Now you're like, now you guys can't foul.
Right, exactly.
You can't do that.
Exactly. No. JVT put it pretty simply on By the Books. We caught him before. It's like, wait, we got to overreact and change every rule. I get it. It was a great game. There was incredible shot making throughout the entire game. It was fun to watch, and it kind of sucks when it ends that way. But you know, like, if you're betting on this, I didn't have a bet, but I had that play in the contest, lane three. I knew I was dead because I knew OKC was going to go foul.
Yeah, but I thought you might get it on if they blew a whistle on that rebound. I was like, maybe you'll get two free throws here. You know, so it was in the balance. In the end, now Game five, as I mentioned, back in OKC with OKC now a chance to close out the T-Wolves. OKC an 8-point favorite tomorrow night. 220.5 is the total. If you are asking how many teams in the history, we talk about teams that are down 3-0, 0 times have they ever come back in the history of the NBA playoffs from a 3-0 deficit in a best of seven series. Only 4 times has a team pushed it to a seventh game. Well, if you're down 3-1 in a best of seven series, do you know the answer to how many teams have come back from a 3-1 deficit in the history?
I feel like I did last year, but no, I don't remember anymore.
13 times total.
Okay.
13 times total. Who could forget the 1979 Bullets against the Spurs? I remember that one. 13 times it's happened. But of those 13 times, you then ask yourself, yeah, but how many of those 3-1 comebacks were with teams that didn't have home court advantage? In other words, didn't have games 5 or 7 at home, only game 6 at home. And the answer is it's only happened 5 times. Mm. So historically speaking, for the T-Wolves to pull this off, it would be something else. And against a team like OKC, who if you now add their playoff record to their regular season record, they are 79-14.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
They don't really lose basketball games.
And they don't lose at home.
Yeah.
That's the bigger one. All right, this was... look, you're just overmatched, Minnesota. Sorry, this series is over. It was Minnesota's got a good team. They do. Role players stepped up huge for them last night. Ant was suffocated on defense. This Oklahoma City Thunder defense is just incredible.
One other note on this series coming up. We'll get Kelly's thoughts on tonight's game. Tennis picks. May wins update. It's all coming up. Numbers game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or Saratoga Racecourse, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. You and I have a similar experience. We don't do well betting horses. And then we went ahead and we bet journalism to win the Preakness.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we finally get a winner, but then we also bet other stuff and we lost.
Oh, no, you might have. I only bet the other stuff.
Oh, you only
bet the other stuff. Yeah, I only bet the trifectas and all that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Didn't mean to bring it. Oh, I do have a grievance about for you.
Oh,
good. I have a Gil versus Kelly grievance after you had a grievance against me yesterday.
All right, cool.
You know how in the contest you're like, yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. You and Fezzik are good contest players. I'd say Fezzik is a great contest player. I would say mine is just as much handicapping as it was contest on this one.
Well done then.
Yeah,
you've had a good playoff run.
Yeah,
would you have an 8-1 tear or something?
8-1-1, buddy.
Yeah, man, that's a sick tear.
Don't worry, I'm still like literally Fezzik's magic number to knock me out is 1.
Yeah,
I'm done. Yeah. I'm done too. I'm not winning this.
He's pretty much dominated thing throughout.
Zach can still beat him.
Yeah.
And here's the thing we don't know about the contest. Remember, there's a tiebreaker. And that is concealed. We don't know. I do, by the way. But we don't. I'm not allowed to say it out loud because Fezzik's like, no, but there might be a competitive advantage if you say it out loud, right? But you, before the contest began, we had to submit via email the team we thought would win the NBA championship.
Was the matchup in the winner?
Just the winner. Which you would think would be just, oh, clearly everyone's going to take the same team. Not the case.
Well, not that I have to worry about it anyways, but mine's already eliminated.
Oh, who'd you have?
I think I sent in the Celtics for that.
Oh, you did? Okay. All right. Let's talk some hockey. For goodness sake, while all this basketball has been going on, the NHL in full effect. In full effect mode, as the great Al B. Shore once said. Jake Hahn joins now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow Jake on Twitter at jhahn4. That's H-A-H-N. Of course, co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show at SiriusXM NHL. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing great, guys. And I guess even a little bit better because we've got an extra hockey game this week. I thought we would get the sweep last night. Ultimately, Carolina steps up. They finally win a conference final game. It'd been a long time for Hurricanes fans. So I know it's likely they're going to lose the series here at some point. But at least you get one. You avoid the sweep. And we get another hockey game to break down on Wednesday. And obviously, we have a really big one tonight as well between the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, game five back in Carolina tomorrow night is a virtual coin flip, by the way, on the line. What about that last night, Jake? I just want to ask you as a guy who follows hockey closer than Kelly and I do. So Carolina just gets rolled in the first three games. They look terrible. That after, you know, crushing the Caps, that's a whole nother story. And then last night they come out, they win 3-0. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, you know, if we win this next one, all of a sudden the pressure is all, you know, with the Panthers. What about that? Is it just hockey as hockey is, or was there something to it last night?
Well, I think there was a little something to it. Not that the series has shifted by any means and, you know, Carolina's going to rhyme off a couple more and rip this to seven. I don't think that that's going to happen. But I think if you just looked at last night's game, Gil, we use the cliche probably too much when it comes to breaking down hockey. Okay, if you score first, everyone wants to score first. Of course you want to score first. We also want to score second. You want to score third. You want to score fourth. You want to score all the goals, right? But
score fourth. That's kind of my thing.
Yes. Yeah. Fourth would be good as well. Any time you could score, it's a good time. But I think specifically in this series, and I don't think Carolina is built to trail in hockey games and come back in games, especially against Florida. It's one thing against maybe a different team, but Florida and how well they defend and Carolina's offense can tend to go away a little bit. I just think trailing in hockey games is not meant for them in this series. And they finally got a chance to score first. Now, it was a late first goal. It didn't come until the second period, but you could just tell it went right to their legs playing with the lead. Florida was still doing a lot of good things to get in the zone, but it felt like they were closed off a lot more by Carolina. The pucks just weren't bouncing for them around the net. There was a couple moments where I thought, oh, Florida's going to tie it here. They have a, you know, a little mini 2-on-1 or a great chance right in front of the net, and it would bounce over a stick or it just wouldn't go their way. So things didn't go Florida's way last night. I wouldn't read too much into it to say that this series has dramatically shifted. I think it's as simple as Carolina being able to finally get to their game for the first time in this entire series.
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable explanation. I think most would agree with that. You'd be on Florida then tomorrow night?
I will be on Florida tomorrow night. I've been on Florida in some fashion in every game so far. Obviously, last night it didn't work out, but I still liked a lot of the things I saw from the Panthers. And hey, you got to give Carolina credit. They were desperate. They don't want to get swept again and have to hear about how they never win a conference final game and the Metro stinks and the Atlantic is way better. So you could tell there was the desperation, which you would have expected. I actually thought Florida matched that. They just couldn't find a way to score a goal. Now, we aren't getting as good of a line on the Panthers tomorrow night as we did in the first two games in Carolina. We actually got them at plus money in games one and two, which I loved. I was hoping to maybe get that price again, but about minus 110, you know, I'm seeing it up to minus 115 in some places. I'd be comfortable playing it at anything around a pick 'em. I like the Panthers to close it out tomorrow night.
Okay. As far as tonight is concerned, Dallas and Edmonton. Edmonton up 2-1. Game four tonight. Edmonton trying to extend the lead to 3-1. They are a minus 151 favorite in this game. I want to relate this to my buddy, who many listeners are familiar with, Todd Wishnev. Todd does this thing where whenever he voices a bet, right, where he's like, oh, man, I think this is a great bet, and then he doesn't follow through and actually bet it, I think he is a documented lifetime 5 bajillion and 0, I think. It always works out if he doesn't then follow through the bet. This applies to other things in life, right? He's like, you know, you should really invest in these Bitcoin ETFs. Are you investing? He goes, I don't know if I am. Soars, right?
Yeah.
So I, earlier in the NHL playoffs, I said, you know, this Edmonton team, I don't know much about hockey, but they look like they might win the Stanley Cup. And of course, Jake, I did not bet it. And so here they are, and now I'm having all this regret. And so now I'm like, I'm figuring out this is the worst. What amounts to was a chase bet here, where I'm like, okay, they're too short to bet right now. But I look at the Conn Smythe market and Leon Draisaitl is still in double digits. Like, is this an impossibility that he would win it if they win the cup?
Well, Kelly knows this as well, betting golf. And a lot of people will ask me for my golf takes, you know, leading up to a tournament. And I'll say, well, I kind of like this person, And then, you know, you can't bet everybody. You end up not betting a couple guys that maybe you really liked. And then you pull up the leaderboard on Thursday and the guy that you liked that you didn't bet is, you know, minus six and he's leading the golf tournament. And you're like, well, now I need a piece of him. I'm desperate and you don't want to bet him at horrible odds. So I know exactly what you're saying, Gil, about that, you know, non-Edmonton bet that you made and still trying to find a way to bet it without taking, you know, the Edmonton Cup price. I think Drysdale at 12-1 is reasonable because this award does come with a lot of recency bias. Now you'd still need a lot of things to go your way. You would need Drysdale and Edmonton to obviously make the Cup final, win the Cup, and he would have to have the big series, which he's very capable of doing. McDavid's the man right now, and he is driving this team. He's just unbelievable to watch. But by no means could Drysdale could go out there and have six goals in the Cup final, and everybody's going to remember that and vote for Drysdale. So I think at 12-1, if you still want to get a piece of that and you feel like you missed out, I don't mind that number on Leon at 12-1. Yeah.
The flip side of this, of course, Jake, going into the psychology of a bettor is the moment I bet Drysdale, the Stars will come back and win this series, right? That's obviously part of this superstition as well. And what about this game tonight? Edmonton against Dallas. Dallas still, according to some, the team to beat, no matter that they're down 2-1.
I think this is different than the Eastern Conference series. All due respect to Carolina, they did get a well-deserved win last night, but Dallas has a way better chance of getting back in this series against Edmonton. Now, I picked Edmonton in this series. I still like Edmonton to get it done. I just don't think it's maybe going to be as neat and tidy as it's looked the last couple of games. The Oilers get that 3-0 shutout. And then the 6-1 game on Sunday afternoon, you look at that score and go, wow, the Oilers blew them out of the water, and they did in the third period. But, you know, that was a 2-1 hockey game late into the second period. McDavid scores a goal in the final minute, and that was just kind of a backbreaker for Dallas. So it was a lot closer, I think, than the score indicated. Don't really think there's a ton of value on the money line in tonight's game, even though I would lean Edmonton to get it done on home ice, guys. I think the under 6.5 is where I would look here. I know it's frightening to take an under between these two teams, but we're starting to see these games tighten up. We had a dead set under on Friday night. It probably should have been an under in the last game, and it ends up still barely going over by a goal with that 6-1 final. So under 6.5, you'll have to pay a little juice for it, but I think we tighten this thing up as it gets deeper and deeper into the series.
All right. And would you, in a hypothetical Stanley Cup final, would you make Florida the series favorite over either Dallas or Edmonton, or would you make Dallas the series favorite over Florida, but Florida the series favorite over Edmonton?
At this point, I would have to make Florida the favorite over anybody. I don't know if the odds makers are going to agree with me on that. And if I do catch Florida as an underdog, it's going to be hard to resist them. But I go back to your original thought, Gil. To me, it feels like the Oilers' year. It feels like McDavid will not be denied 2 years in a row. So I'm still rolling with the Edmonton Oilers. But yeah, if I'm pricing it, I almost have to make Florida the favorite against anybody at this point.
Does it mean a lot to you personally to have a cup win in Canada?
Not me personally. I the rest of Canada doesn't really do that as much as people think, but yeah. I would be happy for the fans in Edmonton and mostly the individual of Connor McDavid.
There you go. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it. Drew Dinson.
Thanks, boys.
Tennis in the NBA next.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. Drew Dinsick standing by to join us, talk some tennis and some NBA, see if has any tennis plays still to come here today from Roland Garros. By the way, we did get a tweet on your pronunciation, Kelly. Bruce Dobigan. Have to give Kelly a half point for his Cajun pronunciations of the courts at Roland Garros. Apparently, you pronounce them.
I had to throw a little of the Cajun / French flair into it. Okay, yeah. I knew it wasn't Suzanne.
No, it wasn't Suzanne. I do want to say about that the last question I had for Andy, right? Because I don't want to give the impression that I think of Canada as a monolith, right? Because obviously, Canada a vast nation with different cities and different fanhoods for all their teams. But I do think it's hilarious that we have some Americans, right, mm-hmm. who are just so into a Canadian team not winning the cup that to ask it in reverse, I thought it was an interesting question because I don't think they view it, generally speaking, the same way. And what Jake was saying was pretty much confirming that.
Yeah, I think that like that was about as stern of a tone that we could have gotten from Jake Hahn, because he's one of like the nicest dudes on the planet. About like, no, we're not celebrating an Edmonton win here in Toronto. Like that ain't happening. But yeah, it's been interesting. We were talking about it off the air. It's been interesting the whole. There were like USA chants going on at the Stars game, but just because the Stars have like slightly less Canadian players on their roster than every other team in the NHL.
And the Stars have a lot of Finnish players.
Yeah.
We're chanting USA.
That's how we chant. God bless you, Texas. Like, that's how you take that. That's great.
Anyway. Just thought that was interesting. Drew Dinsick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the co-host of not one, but two podcasts, and he does a deep dive daily now. So it's the Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. It's NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. He just got off doing a deep dive daily with Andy. He joins us now at whale_capper, by the way, is where you can follow him on Twitter. How you doing, Drewski?
I'm wonderful. Hope you guys had a great Memorial Day weekend. And especially good morning to the Oklahoma City Thunder for holding on for dear life yesterday, man. If they had lost that game and we were 2-2 going back to Oklahoma City, I would be in a very, very different mood right now.
Yeah, you feeling a little looser like I am this morning, Drew? I think it would have been a little tight everywhere today if they lost that game.
What are your longest futures numbers on the Thunder?
It's not about price, Gil.
It's about volume. Stick. It's about volume.
It's about the stick.
Yes.
I have about 60% of my actively managed bankroll on the Thunder to win the West.
Wow.
Whew.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
Mine's up there, too, but it is. I don't think it's that high.
As I said, only 13 times in the history of the NBA has a team come back from a 3-1 deficit, and only 5 times have they come back when they don't have home court advantage. So, again... History is on your side.
It would not be the biggest payout I've ever hit, Gil, but this is the most amount of money that I have wrapped up in one futures side ticket, whatever. That's multiple bets. So yeah. Thunder to win.
Yeah, you do have to clarify that. That's right. It's a different.
It's +120. It's +115. It's +110. It's multiple of those.
Iga French Open 2020 the most, or Ole Miss 2022 the most I've ever made. But the most outlay was like Floyd Mayweather beating Conor McGregor, where you're like, all of a sudden the fight's coming. You're like, what have I done? You know, that kind of thing.
Give us one of those again.
I mean, the timing worked out with the Super Bowl. Like, I had a killer Super Bowl with the Eagles, and you know, absolutely flush. Sincerely looking at futures prices, and I was just like, man, there are 3 super teams in the NBA and only one of them's in the West. What is going on here? Why aren't these guys like -150? My price on them when I got into it, which was in the +120 +140 range, my fair at that time was like -180, and so I was feeling pretty confident. And game 7 was uncomfortable in that first quarter in particular against the Nuggets. And yesterday, as SGA fails to fight through a single screen and gives wide open corner three after wide open corner three to DiVincenzo and company, it's just like, really, guys? Really? Like, come on, fight. Get through that screen. But, I mean, you know, you're watching the game and it's pretty clear, like, yeah, that the Wolves, you know, having been to the Western Conference Finals last year, like, they're not going away lately. They're not pushovers. They're not going to let go of the rope. They're going to continue to fight. And that's going to make this, you know, this final win difficult. I'm nowhere close to kind of the current market price on the Wolves, the series price for the Thunder, -6,000 is a little bit aggressive. My fare right now is -1766 for the Thunder, +1766 for the Wolves. So not, you know, no value for to bet the Wolves to come back from what I could tell you in the 16-1-ish range. It's pretty clear that SGA is carrying a heck of a lot of the load offensively for this team, and it's the fatigue is wearing him down to the point where he is just, he's not able to fight through the screens and defend those corner threes. And that's honestly what sunk them last year against the Mavericks in that second round playoff series, where PJ Washington was just getting every shot he wanted in the corner and no one was able to get a body on him. And that's not now, that's happening now with the Wolves. But at least Degenau has kind of figured out that he needs to go small. I doubt we see much more of Isaiah Hartenstein in this series. And I think, you know, the youth and the bench in particular at home should be able to give us the scoring, you know, push we need to get this thing across the finish line in game 5. My game 5 price is not 8.5. I'm at 7.5. So market a little more confident than I am that the Thunder are just going to end this thing. But yeah, this is until it's over, until that one's in the book, it's going to be a restless week.
Let me ask you this, and maybe you've already answered it by your previous your previous dissertation there, but I'm not sure you have entirely, which is if Oklahoma City won the next five games, so close out Minnesota, then sweep the Eastern Conference opponent, it would not be the most surprising thing in the world. But what's the scenario, short of injuries? What's the scenario? Maybe it's SGA leaving a guy open in a corner, but what else is the scenario where they don't get it done? Like, what happens to torpedo this for you?
A first quarter injury for Chet Holmgren in game five.
We're not allowed to use injuries.
And that's really, yeah. I mean, I honestly, if something happens to Holmgren, that's probably it.
So short of injury, nothing.
I don't see that. I don't see Finch. Number one, I haven't really seen much that Finch really has the right read on, and I don't know that he has the right pieces to really kind of make broad adjustments to what the Wolves are doing. And I don't think the Wolves defense is stopping a small ball Thunder lineup right now with anchored with Holmgren, particularly the way Holmgren's been playing.
But I'm even saying projecting into the finals, though, Drew, what happens to the Thunder short of injury that doesn't allow them to win the championship? As you
I
see
actually it. Think that I honestly think that the finals will be easier for them than this Western Conference, than the second round. I think is going to ultimately stand as sort of that was their finals. It's just because the extra rest that you get in between days should help SGA stay fresh. Because he looks like he's tired to me, at least particularly in these fourth quarters, he looks tired and he's still able to get it done offensively. I definitely get annoyed hearing people kind of, use these opportunities to, throw shade or call him a foul merch or anything like that. Like, he was the rightful MVP this year, guys. Like, take a deep breath. Like, this guy is a huge part of this era of NBA. He will be for years to come. And he now anchors the team that you will have to go through to win a championship. So, get used to it. And I think ultimately, with a couple of days between finals games, he's probably the heavy favorite, in my opinion, for finals MVP if they get there.
I'll answer that question for you, Gil. This is the Thunder don't get it done if Shea doesn't get any offensive help in the finals. Okay. If what we saw last night and J Dub and Chet and some of those guys kind of disappear and it all falls on Shea, then yeah, there's a sliver of hope, I think, for one of those Eastern Conference teams.
Drew, did you want to rail on this Nate Duncan suggestion about NBA teams up three should not be allowed to foul? Did you see any of this last night?
No, but Nate Duncan doesn't get any kind of scorn from me at all. He is one of the best voices in basketball, and I'm surprised that he doesn't have a larger platform. Like, why are we listening to what Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins have to say? Like, listen to what Nate Duncan has to say. Like, that guy absolutely rocks.
How about the 45 second screaming halftime show they had yesterday? That was awesome. I know.
I can't watch it.
Kelly said the same thing about Nate Duncan, but none of us are 100% on takes, right? And so I am. I don't agree with that, right? I don't think you should punish his suggestion. By the way, we'll throw up the tweet again. His suggestion was, again, because it's aesthetically unpleasing, like the end of last night's game supposedly was to him, that the team's up three, which is great strategy, I believe. We've been talking about on this show forever that they should not be allowed to do that because it turns the game from a beautiful thing into a foul fest. And my position is you can't make artificial competition. You can't penalize the team that's ahead and say, okay, now you can't foul. And then some people were suggesting an Elam ending now to the NBA. I just find this one particular take from him to be a little off, a little in the moment.
Yeah, and it is. And I think it kind of what's lost to me is the Thunder had to make their free throws, right?
Like, yes.
Those were some intense free throws. You're in a hostile environment. If you're not making those, then you're reliving what the Knicks went through in game one, right? Like, this is you know, that it's two to tango for the most part. And if, you know, if they're not making their free throws there, then all of a sudden that thing, shifts on a dime. Those were sweaty. Those were sweaty palms watching that. That was intense. It was intense for anyone involved. I don't think that you can take away the intensity factor by saying that there should be a moment where they must get an opportunity to make a game tying three. Like, yeah, I mean, I get it. You want a little more drama. There hasn't been a lot of drama in the Western Conference Finals to this point because the end of that game was finally delivered.
Shea missed the free throw. That caused a lot of the drama to begin with.
He did.
Drew's take on the Knicks Pacers tonight and some tennis on the other side. Numbers game. Peace.